please go ahead.
Olga?
Thank you. Yes, who's there?
This is Tony. I just wanted to suggest, in case you hadn't thought about it, could we have a roll call to see who's on the call?
Yes,
yes.
Of course.
Yeah. SS Drans.
SS, are you there?
Yes.
Yeah.
Great to know that. Happy New Year to you.
Oh, Happy New Year. It was some dialing difficulty for me. Yeah?
Okay.
I'll do a roll call for you, Olga.
Yes, please.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. On the call, we have Rafik Damak, Zahid Jamil, Victoria McEvedy, Olga Cavelli, Tony Harris, Claudio Di Gangi, and SS. And for staff, we have Julie Headland and Glenda Saint-Gerie. We have apologies from Chuck Gomes and Krista Papak.
Okay.
Thank you, Olga. It's over to you.
Thank you very much, Glenn. Good morning, good evening, everyone. Happy New Year, if I didn't say it individually to you. Thank you for joining today. We have an agenda. Before we start, Julie, or do we have any news, any policy update that we should have in mind before we do our work?
Olga, this is Julie. No, there was not a board meeting between our last call and this one. I have no policy updates to provide at this point.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Julie. Any questions to Julie about policies updates? None. Okay. We agreed to review the draft documents produced by some working teams one by one, starting from 1.1, going then to 1.2, and so on. So today, the idea is to review SS documents. Thank you so much, SS, for joining. One clarification comment. The idea is to help to have this conversation today for 1 hour. I can stay longer if it's needed, but it's not the agenda is to work for 1 hour. If we need more time, it will be done in another call, and we will review the documents one by one. This is what we discussed and agreed during the last call. Are we okay with that?
Yep.
Okay. So we have SS document uploaded in the wiki. Julie has been so kind to upload it in the wiki so we can see it. We have some comments. We also agreed to send comments and suggestions of changes or deletions to the list. So far, maybe I missed something, so please help me if I'm mistaken. I have received some comments from Krista and from Tony. And also Chuck made a comment to Krista's comments. That's all I have received so far. Have you, any of you, seen in the list something that I didn't note? Okay. So,
hello, SS here.
Yes.
Comment is not from Tony, but this other friend who was in. I forget. Difficult to get the name.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I cannot understand you very well.
Olga, yes. SS might be referring to the comp. This is Claudio. SS
yes.
Referring to
thank
I had.
Yeah, comment is from Claudio, not from Tony. Yeah, right.
I believe Tony had a comment as well. On the, I think it was on the other document, though.
Yeah, Tony had a comment about Annex B. I think it's on this document or on Victoria's document.
On Victoria's document.
Okay. So, Tony, you have a comment for this document drafted by SS and his sub-working team?
Not right now.
Okay. So it's only the suggestion sent by Krista and a comment sent by Chuck. Are we okay with that?
And Olga, this is Claudio. I had
yes.
I think there was a couple comments on some of these items as well.
Okay, great. So I would suggest the following. I've been checking the Krista's comments, and she has two type of documents sent to the list. One is with some type of changes that maybe we can check them and agree if we like them and upload it into the document now or then. And then she has some questions. We can review them after we see the first Word document with her changes, and then we go to your comments, Claudio, and we go through the document revision from the start to the end. You think this is a good way to proceed?
Yes, I have a comment on that, as already mentioned,
sure.
Olga.
Please go ahead, Victoria.
Yes, it's really, I'm as I've raised on the list, I just wanted to ask and to perhaps just as a courtesy to be sure that SS didn't want to have the option, having spent all the time, to make the changes himself. So SS, I'm just asking whether or not that's something you might be interested in doing or you're quite happy for Julie to make them.
SS, it's all your decision.
Yeah, now I'll talk about both the comments. I'll thank Krista about typo errors, and they have to be, must be incorporated. Julie can do it. Next is some questions. Now, for WT, I'd like to tell that certain things are beyond our scope. So that is within GNS scope, and while submitting the report to GNSO, these questions can be raised to GNSO. And if anything is within our scope, this WT can discuss and take decision. That's one. About Claudio's comment, I'd like to tell one thing, that this team is working for GNSO improvements.
Yes.
Now, certain improvements are not palatable or not agreed or not accepted by certain constituencies. Now, what should be the right thing is that instead we should be, WT should be taking decision to go against the ICANN mandate. The best thing should be that constituencies should go to GNSO and ICANN and say that, well, we can't follow this your guidelines. And in my opinion, they would have gone much earlier before this WT was formed. So that is about Claudio. So my request will be that WT should be very careful in considering those points or not transgressing its mandate or scope of responsibility. With that, I'll not, I mean, probably there won't be any need for me to answer anything. And as far as this chair said about 1 hour meeting, so I believe if I leave after half an hour, I think it may be good. I'll agree to whatever decision is taken. I won't have any objection to that.
Thank you, SS. Let me remind you that, and I think your comments are very good. First, let me clarify. You're okay if Julie makes the changes to your document? Is that okay for you?
Yeah.
Okay, great. And once we have a draft document, it will be submitted to the GNSO, and it will be reviewed again by all the council members, and it will be sent to constituencies for revision. So your comments are very much appreciated, but I think that we are doing the procedure we have to follow, and the GNSO will review again our documents. So we will be sure that we are doing they will find a final text, and maybe it comes to us.
I'll further request here that when Julie is doing any correction to my document, she should very carefully go through my what comments I have made, and if any doubt is there, she should come back to the chair or maybe hold the WT instead of correcting the document in a hurry.
I think that Julie will make sure that the changes are really visually clear and visible, so we can all review them after the call also.
Olga, this is, can I respond?
Yes. Yes, go ahead, Claudia.
I believe what SF is referring to are some of the Board Governance Committee recommendations, and I think that my comments, or some of the previous ones, were that I think we have a different interpretation on what some of those recommendations were. And so while we're in this process of implementation, that is where I think we're seeing things slightly differently. So I think SS sort of presented it as if the constituencies are not agreeing with what some of the recommendations were. I don't think that's really the case. We just have slight interpretations of how we should go about implementing them.
Yeah, Claudia, I agree, and as I said, our document will go to GNSO, and it will go to different constituencies for revision. And if GNSO and constituencies find it inaccurate, we will have the chance to review it again. So let's find a text that it's okay for our working team and try to move forward to GNSO, because in March we will have been working for 1 year, and I think it's enough time to produce an outcome. Okay, any other comments? Great. I would suggest that we take a look at the changes suggested by Krista about the typos and all that. They are at the end of SS document, and it's the inclusion of the word group or groups in some of the paragraphs. I was going to ask the group if we are okay with these changes. You think they are appropriate, so we can include them or not? I don't see a big problem in accepting them. SS, what do you think about Krista's suggestion?
Yeah, I appreciate the comments, and they should be accepted.
Okay, any other comments? Are we okay with Section 2, for example, Paragraph B, saying all groups shall abide rules governing and all group members? She had added the word group in several sections of the document, and I think it clarifies the text. So we like these changes. Okay. Julie, could you... I don't ask you to make these changes now, but you can consider these changes and upload them into the final document or a new version.
Yes, this is Julie, and I'll be happy to make those changes. They're very clear and straightforward.
Yeah, they're very clear. So great. So this is one document I have in my screen. Then we have some questions sent by Krista. Do we want to go through the text one by one and then make the questions? You think that's a good idea?
Yeah.
I'm trying to find the text now.
Yeah, that sounds all right.
Okay. Wiki. Here. Okay, we have the text. You want me to read it? Final recommendations, subtask 1, GNSO, OSC, constituency, stakeholder group, operations, work team, background. Should I read it all? Yes, I will. After several GNSO reviews, the ICANN Board Governance Committee created a working group to consider the results of the reviews and recommendations, comprehensive proposals to improve the effectiveness of the GNSO. This is in the wiki. You can follow me so we can find the text that we want to accept or no, including its policy, activities, structure, operations, and communications. The BCG working group produced a comprehensive set of recommendations. Well, that's a name. There's a link. This report has been extensively referred to in preparing this recommendation document. As follow-up to the above referred report, the GNSO Council formed 2 steering committees, and then there's the name of the 2 steering committees, and call the OSC constituency and stakeholder group operations team, OSC CSG working team. In this document, working team means OSC CSG work team. It has a wiki page. There's a link to the wiki page. Julie, can you, after the call, review all these links if they are okay? I'm not going to open all the links now because I will surely get confused.
Yes, Olga, this is Julie. I will review the links. Also, for all of you, I have now uploaded the document with Krista's changes to the wiki. If you refresh your screens, then you will see that document in the window.
That's fast. I'm impressed. Congratulations. Okay. Following the background section, the working team with GNSO staff support created a work plan and broke it into stacks and substacks. This document can be seen in the above referred wiki page. SS Catrilla, SS, volunteered to lead task one, subtask one. Other working team members volunteering to work for task one, subtask one are Victoria McEvedy, Claudia Digangi, and Rafik Damak. Is this okay? Are we missing someone here?
It's okay, Olga.
Okay. Subtask one is described as develop recommendations for a set of participation rules and operating procedures which all constituencies should abide by. Subtask one was further divided into three sections, and this have been detailed in the recommendations. In addition to the BCG Working Group report, we refer to Constituency Renewal and Stakeholder Group, FG, charter document submitted to the board for approval, there's a link, as well as staff analysis of constituency and stakeholder group charters that can be seen in this wiki page. This is the text that corresponds to the title background. Any suggestions, any changes? Do we like this text? Do we change something? Great. Now we go to the substance. We go to recommendations. Section 1, participation principles. The BCG report at paragraph 43 mandated the development of constituency developed participation rules for all constituencies that encourage openness, transparency, and accountability. The rules must adhere to the following principles. The criteria for participation in any ICANN constituency should be objective, standardized, and clearly stated. Any changes to this sentence?
I don't think we need to go through that, do we? Because it's a quote from the BCB. Sorry, Olga, to interrupt you, but that's just a quote. That's been lifted exactly from, hasn't it? From hasn't that been lifted exactly?
Right. You're right. Yeah, you're right. But I didn't see the quoted starting. This is why I saw it starting and finishing, and then
yeah, those principles I think come from the.
Okay.
Yeah, it's all. I think that whole first section there comes straight from the report.
Okay.
So
we go to this abstract. Thank you very much, Victoria. I thought that the quoted was finished. So I should start where it says this abstract team developed the following rules to implement this recommendation and proposes that all stakeholder groups, constituencies, parentheses hereinafter called groups, shall adopt the rules below for participation. Such rules and procedures shall be part of their charters. Are we okay with the word groups? Because it's repeated many times in the document, and I like it. I mean, are we okay with that?
Yes.
Great. So it's A, all groups, and there is the two. It goes to paragraph 43. Okay. Sorry. All groups shall adopt these rules for participation to encourage openness, transparency, and accountability. These rules and any other rules governing participation shall be objective, standardized, and clearly stated. Comment? B. The group.
Hi, this is Zahid.
Yes, Zahid, go ahead.
Yeah, just wondering, when we say that the rules governing participation, because we're not talking about principles, we're talking about rules now, and we said rules governing participation shall be objective, that's fine, standardized, I have a question. Does that mean every group or constituency will have exactly the same rules with regard to participation? Because that's what I read from the word standardized, and I know that there will be differences, so I'm just wondering what the purpose of that was.
Can I just can I comment on that? I wouldn't read standardized quite as precisely as that, and I don't think it leaves out room for variation myself. Standardized doesn't mean standard or identical or anything like that. I mean, I think myself, subject to other people's thoughts, it's referring to some commonality, but I don't think that the meaning of the actual semantic word is used. Would require that, Jahid, but that's my thought.
The English native speaker could perhaps suggest another word that could be less confusing. I understand Victoria's point, and this is how I read it, but I also understand Zahid's comment.
Can I make a suggestion, Mrs. Zahid?
Yeah, please.
A word that Victoria used was commonality. You could say with common rules.
Like it. Yeah, I like that. I like her synonym. So your suggestion would be any other rules governing participation shall be objective, common, and clearly stated? I think common.
Any other ideas? I'm happy to take another idea. Because standardized can be interpreted otherwise, that's fine.
I understand your point. Victoria, you're English native.
Yes, I'm just looking actually because I think we would get some help from the other terms used. You see, standardized has been taken from, if you look above, in the second paragraph here.
Yes, it is there. Yeah.
You see, that's where we're taken from. To be honest, it's actually a very good shorthand because it's... commonality would have been a good term. Common is sort of too much, which sort of again suggests standard. It's the standardized and the ality, which arguably imputes some flexibility. Although that's not terribly precise either. I'm afraid that I don't have anything else on the top of my head.
Okay.
But
let's have this word in mind, and maybe in the fall or after we can find a better word. I think standardized it's fine, and I read it as Victoria understands it, but I also understand Zahid's concerns. Zahid, do you have any suggestions?
A very quick one. I mean, instead of actually trying to find a word if we're having difficulty right now, we could just put a footnote in there. That the idea is that they would be common in nature, but not identical.
Well, actually, could I just sorry, now you've given, it's a very good suggestion. I'm just wondering, it might be easier to clarify at the end of that sentence, but, you know, we could just add a proviso, couldn't we, after clearly stated, like something like notwithstanding, rules do not need to be identical, or some sort of language like that. Would that address your concern?
Absolutely, that would be perfectly fine. Thank you.
We could say something like for the absence of doubt. I'd need to actually probably draft it properly, but for the absence of doubt, rules do not such rules may contain variations or something like that.
That would be a sorry, I didn't get it completely. A footnote?
No, it would just be a proviso. So after the words clearly stated, you might add a comment, a comma.
Okay.
And it might say something, for the absence of doubt.
Can you draft it and send it to the list, Victoria?
Yes, I can. It might be easier, actually.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Are we okay with this? Great. B, the groups shall have their participation rules based on common principles developed by the GNSO. These rules then shall be made available in a variety of languages so they can be understood by ICANN's global audience. And I remember Krista making a comment here. She has a question, and maybe we can discuss about it. She says, rules made available in various languages, who translates? If group translates, what if there's no budget? It's a good question, and I would love to have all these conversations in Spanish, but I'm accustomed to working in English. But do we have any comments to Krista's questions?
This is Claudio.
Yes.
I would I need to go back and take a look at the toolkit of services to see if there was...
Yeah, I was remembering that, yeah.
If that was one of the areas where the groups can get support.
Okay.
Yeah, Olga, this is Julie. I'll be happy to pull that document up while we're discussing and see if that is something that's included there.
Yeah, I think that the word variety is confusing. I would love to have different languages, but having documents in a variety of languages is something that we all desire, but it's something that sometimes is very difficult to achieve. Also, in United Nations, if you go there, you have not all the languages available. You have, I think, 6 of them. Luckily, Spanish is one of them, but there are some other languages that are not. So I think it's perhaps too much in a variety of languages.
Could I just add to that? I think that's a really good point, Olga. And I just know that what the EU does is that it has, because there are 26 members of the EU, and I'm not sure how many languages there are. They're not 26, but there's quite a lot. But what they do, the EU institutions have designated a number of working languages. I think there's only 3 of them. I think they're English, French, and German. And I could be wrong about that. It may have changed since.
You're right. And United Nations is 6.
Okay, fine. So maybe that's something that we could footnote there, that maybe there should be a number of working languages. I don't know, and maybe someone should look at that. But it would obviously be it's not appropriate for the constituencies and stakeholder groups just to publish their charters in English, obviously. And if we don't try and do something about this, nothing will happen about it.
I totally agree, and I know that ICANN is making a lot of effort in providing different translations into different languages for many of the documents, and I commend them for that. But I also understand that it is very difficult to do in many languages. So I would suggest, and I take the comments from Krista and questions, before asking who translates, I would like to change the word variety. Maybe we can make a clarification, as Victoria said, perhaps saying in a certain number of working languages, something like that. You think that can be accepted? SS, are you okay if we change a little bit the word variety? SS, we lost you?
Olga, this is Julie. I show that SS has disconnected.
Okay. He said that he was going to be available for 1.5 hours, but maybe...
He said half an hour, I think.
Half an hour. Sorry. Great. No problem. Are we okay if
Olga?
We change the... Yeah, who's there?
This is Zahid. Can I make a point?
Sure. Please go ahead.
Thank you. I think I understand what Krista's trying to get at. It's even with the number of working languages, and the UN has 6, as you well know, and for those who are involved, you see the amount of cost that racks itself up for translation purposes. And I think that even if we have 3 or 4 or 5 languages in which we're going to have these different rules as they keep coming out being translated, I know that say, for instance, the DC members are very sensitive these days to cost implications. So it may be a very important question to ask, would ICANN pay for this, and that would be one way to handle this, or would it be the groups, stakeholders, the constituency that have to pay for it, from their own budget? And so that would be an important issue. So although we can sort of sidebar this right now, but I think I'd like, we need to get clarification as we go along.
Yeah, I'd just like to add to that. I mean, that's a fair enough point, but we are talking about constitutional documents, so there's not a lot of them, and they don't get changed very often. I mean, they are in a big... there's been obviously quite a lot of to-ing and fro-ing with the new stakeholder groups and the reconstitution process, and everything's under amendment, but on the whole, constituencies don't change their charters every 2 minutes. And both the participation principles and operational principles are all contained in one document per constituency, and that's the charter. So, I mean, I have to say the expense, I mean, even let's just say that each constituency decided to translate their charter into 4 languages, I mean, quite frankly, that's not a massive expense, and the constituency, at the worst possible scenario, should swallow it. It's not going to cost a lot of money, is it?
You make
I think that's a fair point.
Yeah, that's a very good point. What if we say these rules then shall be, if possible, available in a certain number of working languages so they can be understood by ICANN global audience?
Olga?
Yes, Tony?
Could I make a suggestion? This is Tony.
Sure, please.
Perhaps you could, that's a good way of putting it, but you might even say, following the languages that ICANN normally translates for the general documentation.
Yeah, but what are those languages?
Which are?
So you go to the website, you can see them. I don't know them by heart, but there's
okay.
It's Spanish, French. It's there are several. I think there are more than. It's like United Nations or something.
Yeah,
like.
This is Julie Olga. I believe it's the UN languages. I think there are six.
Six. Great. So, which was the text that you suggested, Tony?
I'm sorry. No, the text that you had was fine, but since we seem to be stuck on how to define how many languages, probably the easiest way is when you mention languages to follow the customary proceedings with ICANN translated documents.
So this would be these rules then shall be made available in the working languages for ICANN. I don't know how to
well, the languages normally documents in ICANN are normally the important documents, at least as far as I can see, are normally automatically translated into several languages. These could be part of that process.
I have to say, I mean, it's a great suggestion, but I think that that might end up being gamed a bit later by mean parsimonious groups. Let's not put it any further than that. Why don't we just pull those languages and stick them in?
That's okay with me. I have no problem.
So this would be, these rules then shall be made available in English, Spanish, French. That's what you mean?
Yeah.
And this would be, these rules then shall be made available in English, which are developed in. And you tell me, Spanish should be one. It's a joke.
Olga, this is Julie. I will list the languages that are
okay.
So
they can be understood by ICANN's global audience. So Julie puts all the languages there, which I think are six, and starting with English, which is the working language, and then it says so they can be understood by ICANN's global audience. Are we okay with this change?
Great.
Yeah, that's good.
Thank you. C, all groups shall improve inclusiveness and representativeness and shall explore the possibility to have differential fee structures based on ability to pay in order to encourage increased representation from those living in less developed economies. Comments? Krista has a comment. She says, differential fee structure based on ability to pay. She says, registrars used to have this, but it ultimately determined it wasn't much of a benefit, and it was easier to go with one fee for everyone. If the obligation is only to explore it, then it should be fine, but prefer to leave it out. This is Krista's comment. Any other comments from the group?
Well, I rather think that it's probably something actually quite important. I mean, I know I have to pay $70 to join the IPC, and that's not a lot of money. But you've actually got to pay it. You've got to pay it to their bank account or something. So you end up paying £70 or something. I can't remember what it was, but I ended up having to pay enormous bank transfer charges because there's no way to give a check to a US organisation, so I had to wire it. Anyway, so it costs like £100, which is not, it's not a lot of money, but, for someone living in Ethiopia, that's an absolute fortune.
Yeah.
And it absolutely is a barrier to entry. So, I mean, it's all very well. I mean, the registrars and the registers, they're commercial organisations, but for the NC, sort of for groups that are aimed at internet users and broader participation and what have you. I mean, fees can be really prohibitive. It is only to explore, but I mean, I think we, if anything, should be really encouraging sliding scales.
Any other comments? I personally like the idea of having this differentiation for allowing, and I totally understand your point, Victoria. I live in a developing country, and I know how difficult it is to raise money and to pay and to transfer money. And it's, for us, any fee in US dollars or pounds is extremely high. So, yes, Claudia?
Yeah, I also agree with what I mean. I appreciate, you know, that issue that Victoria just raised. I think this is what Krista touched on in her comment, is that actually implementing this is probably complicated. I think it sounds like a good idea, but it might get tricky with actually setting up a uniform sort of rule for how to implement this. Of other ICANN, I don't think ICANN generally sets up different fee structures. I think usually it's sort of a uniform fees.
You make a very good point, Claudia, but we can use some other elements that ICANN is using. For example, if you review the rules for the fellowship program that brings people from developing countries that cannot pay the ticket to attend an ICANN meeting and they are trying to make outreach, they apply the rules for defining what is a developing country based on United Nations designation. So that could be a good point to start. If you participate in United Nations meetings, sometimes you get funding if you are from a developing country or not. This is a distinction made in a certain list that has been already decided by an international organization, which is the United Nations. So perhaps that could be a reference if we think that this differentiation is it's good to have. And I understand the complexity of implementing it. Any comments?
Are we taking anything? I mean, I'm sorry, Olga. What are you really? Are you suggesting that we just? I'm sorry. Did I just not follow what you were saying? But I would just add that we have an opportunity to really either give this a nudge or leave it nowhere, where nothing will ever be done about it.
I agree. We should decide first if we are okay with this or we are not. I think it could be complicated, but I think it's good to have it. What do others think?
Yeah, this is Claudia. I'm okay with having it the way it's worded.
Victoria?
Well, I'd like to take out explore if it's going to stay as it is, then I think we should add a proviso that there should be some sort of relief system. You know, if it's not going to be a general rule, we could at least add some language in that basically sort of left an appeal procedure for someone who's, you know, that you could apply to the head of the constituency for an exemption. You know, so they should explore as a general rule having sliding scales, but even if they don't do that, they should have, you know, sort of a poverty relief, you know, everybody should have a poverty relief mechanism.
What I tried to say before, I don't know if I was clear, is that there are some grouping of countries that are used for in several funding procedures in defining what's a developing country or not, and so that helps for some funding. I know it's used by the fellowship of ICANN. I don't remember exactly the wording they have.
Well, to do it per country is one thing, but I mean, I guess what I'm really just suggesting is, could we just put in a recommendation that all constituencies have definitely have a rule to relieve financial hardship relief, you know, so that they can make an exception from the usual fee structure, even if they don't decide to have a sliding scale generally.
That would be a different wording as it's expressed now.
It would just be a proviso on the end, I think. I mean, I think it could be done by a proviso, and just it could say something like, you know, yeah, really, all groups should have a mechanism for any potential member to apply for hardship relief in order to join.
I'm writing it. All groups should have a mechanism for...
For any potential member to apply, or member or potential member to apply for hardship relief.
Okay. I'd like to make a comment when you finish drafting.
I have two words missing. To apply for?
The word I was using was hardship.
How do you write it?
Yes, hard, H-A-R-D.
Yeah.
Ship, S-H-I-P.
Yeah, hardship.
Is one word.
Hardship
means? Hardship. It means sort of poverty or... it's
carencia.
Carencia. Okay, thank you, Tony. sorry, my English is limited. All groups should have a mechanism for any potential member to apply for hardship or... and you said something more.
Hardship, no, it's hardship relief.
Relief, okay.
From the normal fee scale, or normally applicable, otherwise applicable fees.
Okay, and we you suggested we leave the text about...
And leave the text. And then basically that would give two options. So they should explore having a sliding scale.
Because it says shall explore, you're right, yeah. It's not mandatory.
Exactly. But at our very minimum there is that they have to have hardship relief. So
okay.
Even if they choose not to bring in a sliding scale, they've got to have, you know, they should be, and I'm, you know, which sends a good message, hopefully, to people who might be shy of applying for the hardship relief otherwise.
Okay. Tony, you wanted to make a comment.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that I think it's a good concept. As a matter of fact, in our constituency in the ISP, we've always applied it. In fact, we don't charge anything to nonprofits or ISPs in developing countries who come, you know, participate now and then or whatever. But the only problem I think you might find in putting that in writing is who can check if it really is a case of hardship relief, or he just doesn't feel like paying it, you know, and it's probably a commercial ISP or a developing country telco, and they can pay whatever it is, $50 or $100 without any problem. In other words, what verification mechanism would you have, which is another hassle, and you know, and then there's appeal to that, and aren't we sort of opening up a can of worms there? If we put it in writing and make it a bylaw sort of thing.
It's better than not having, I mean, surely it's better than not having any encouragement for it. And I don't think there would be a need to, I mean, people can usually recognize hardship when they see it. It's like an elephant. It's like an elephant, isn't it? Hard to describe.
You live in the UK. Obviously you live in the UK. You don't live in the developing regions.
But I mean, people...
With all respect,
if anybody made an application, they would have to give grounds for hardship. And, I mean, if you want to add in a procedure, I mean, I just think that's unnecessary. I mean, every constituency should form its own, you know, should have its own, there should just be a mechanism for people to apply for a release from the normal fees. And they would obviously
You can make it a recommendation. It is recommended that this be taken into account, or...
I would agree with that. This is Claudia. And I mean, I agree, too, with the idea behind what Victoria is getting at here. But I think it's better to set it up as a recommendation, encourage the groups to consider setting up that type of system.
This would be included in this paragraph?
Yeah, I would just use sort of the same language we were going to use, but just set it up as a recommendation.
So it would be another letter, B, C, D, E. All groups should have a mechanism for any potential member to apply for hardship relief from the normal fee scale, I think it would be should be included in this one.
Yeah. I would, you know, explore. I would language because I think Tony raises, you know, a fair point that there's going to again be complexities in how that works.
Tony, what's your suggestion? How can we handle this idea and this text that I think it's very good that Victoria suggested? You how do you want to include it, or which changes you're suggesting?
I'm only saying that instead of saying it should be a requisite article or bylaw, whatever you want to call it, of the constituency, that the, it should be a recommendation to the constituencies to consider mechanisms or alternatives for people to participate who cannot afford to whatever Victoria said about, you know, not being able to pay.
I mean, I would just add, if I might. I mean, Tony, I understand your point. I mean, you're kind of worried. But making it a recommendation, which is a bit of a default position for people who don't like change, I must say, doesn't even address your own point. I mean, your own point is a concern. Your own
really?
Point is actually a concern about, you know, people, you know, some what the criteria for granting hardship relief might be, and not predetermining what hardship criteria might be or the outcome of a hardship application. I mean, that's what you're really complaining about. So making it a mere recommendation is just a bit of, it doesn't even address your point and is a bit of a knee-jerk reaction. So if we're leaving it up to constituencies how to grant the hardship relief and in what criteria, but just saying that they must have a mechanism to do so, I mean, haven't they got the flexibility that you're concerned about?
Victoria, I'm sorry, I back off. Olga, that's okay with me.
I'm
convinced. Yeah, it's a great argument. I'm convinced.
Can I respond to this point, Olga?
Sure, Claudia, go ahead.
I think that I agree with the direction that we're going with, but I think by just saying the groups must have it, but then not giving any guidance as to how that would actually work, doesn't really, I don't think, add a lot of value. I don't think it's necessarily would be clear to the groups how to implement something like that in a fair way, in a non-discriminatory manner, and it could be opening up more problems than it's actually solving.
Okay, I have to say, can I answer that? I'm sure that's a well-intentioned comment, but, I mean, you know, the leaders of these constituencies on the whole are relatively sophisticated people and would deal responsibly, I'm sure, with any application that was made for fee relief on good grounds. And, you know, I would trust that they can do that. I mean, I have faith in the group leaders myself, and I'm just concerned that you don't, wonder why that would be. I mean,
well, it's just because part of the reason is because I think in certain cases hardship applications would be denied, and you'd be putting those folks in a position where they'd be denying hardship applications, I think there should be some sort of guidance given as to how something like that would work.
Well, I think it's likely to be very, very rare that people are going to get a hardship application, and even rarer that they're going to deny it, and I'm sure they won't deny it without perhaps seeking further... I mean, you know, a bit of judgment. I mean, sure, people have judgment, and, I mean, I think it's very rarely likely to be a problem, and good common sense and good judgment should guide leaders of groups through it. I mean, you know, they all have committees of all kinds, don't they? Executive committees and all kinds of committees. So, I mean, these are business people who run the constituencies and the stakeholder groups, and I'm sure they're perfectly capable of dealing with this.
Olga, could I make a comment?
Sure, please.
Victoria, that's very well put, actually. Just think about a couple of cases. It could be a small ISP in Kazakhstan or in Uganda, and we wouldn't have the faintest idea what the capability is.
Yeah, but you could request information. I mean, you could just say, you could ask for their annual turnover.
We're getting into, then you're confirming my point. where that will scale into more procedures and more,
no, that's ridiculous.
More checks
come on,
and everything.
Someone comes to you and you would say, we will consider replication, but could we have the following information? I mean, common sense would enable you to ask for anything you might need to consider. I don't see that there's any need to
thought
make
about
your...
that, yeah. You're right, I hadn't thought about common sense. Okay, fair enough.
I think you'd also have a scenario where you have different procedures, you'd have different hardship procedures. So maybe one constituency would let somebody in if they can meet one criteria, but then another constituency would have a different criteria for who qualifies for the hardship.
And this would be up for any constituent, for all, each of the constituencies. So we cannot express that now.
It just seems to me that if we're leaving it up to them to decide whether or not to grant the hardship, then we're sort of let. If we're going to give the groups that much flexibility, where you could set whatever criteria you want for whether someone qualifies for a hardship exemption, you're basically giving them the criteria to decide whether there should be a hardship exemption at all. It's really no different in my mind. I think we still kind of accomplish the same thing if we put in something that, you know, a recommendation from our group that we think it should be, explored or looked into. Or
everyone will just ignore it. If it's only a recommendation, everyone will ignore it.
I don't think that's the case.
You're basically giving them the option not to do it, so I don't understand that.
Let's think about this. I think the text that Victoria suggested is very good. Maybe we can change one word. It says all groups should have a mechanism for any potential member to apply for hardship relief from the normal fee scale. Maybe we can take the should and put a could, so they have the freedom to decide.
That's a good idea.
I think it should be a minimum, and everyone should have it. I don't know what everyone else thinks, or if we should poll views on it.
You think could is too weak? All groups could have a mechanism.
Could we just? I think we need to step back here. I mean, you know, ICANN's, the GNSO is really serious. Let's look up for a moment to the Board Governance Committee report quote. I mean, you know, or anyway, we know that the board isn't our whole second subtask. Isn't subtask two? No, task two. Isn't it like promoting inclusiveness?
Yes.
Right, so, I mean, one of the key factors that we can actually do here that will really help with task two is do something about this hardship relief.
Yeah.
It's really important.
Right. Yeah. I
hi, this is Zahid. Can I get in the queue?
Yeah, sure. Go ahead, Zahid.
I'm seeing two issues here. I mean, the draft, which is in front of me, which is what's been sent by the work team, seems to be that we're looking at making differential fee structures for representation from less developed countries. Now, that's fairly easy. So if you're from a less developed country, you're easily bracketed, there's no need for any evidence, and you have a differential basis on which you pay the fee. So that's one thing. Now we're talking about, it seems, something completely different, which is sort of like a waiver, a scholarship, a fellowship, or a hardship relief. There, I think we're going to have problems. I think some of them got highlighted as we were speaking. And there will be a question, because these are, most of these constituencies, whether they are, or stakeholder groups, apart from the non-commercials maybe, but everybody else is either businesses. And there will be questions, I'm sure, within those groups being asked about people who may be asking for hardship relief. So they are getting the benefit of being included into the process, but they're not contributing like other members are. So I think that balance has to be there. You have to be able to contribute as well, because we have services that each group provides, and so we can't sort of look at a situation as participating for free. I understand that there should be differentials based on some objective standardized criteria, which could be, fine, you're from a less developed country, we have a differential fee mechanism. But when we're applying for these hardship reliefs, I think it becomes very difficult, and then those members will face difficulties probably in their own groups. Because people will look at them in a different way, I think, and I mean, for one, from a least developed country, don't want to be viewed in that perspective either. But anyway, that's the point I wanted to make.
Sorry, Victoria, Zahid, you have a suggestion for changing the text or adding something?
I think, I mean, my suggestion is if we're going to look at differential fee structures as exploratory, I think that's fine. The existing language is fine. But adding hardship as an additional element, so you've got different structures now. You've got probably in certain constituencies, larger associations and groups of companies which are bigger paying more money as fees. Then you have small consultancies paying less fees. Now you've got to differentiate on the basis of where you come from. So if you're from India or Pakistan or some other place, now that's different. Then comes another group which says these guys are actually in it for free because they've applied for hardship. So really making this fairly complex. I'd be happy to stick with, say, for instance, the language which is there in C.
I'd just like to add one point, David, which is I think is important to your analysis, and that is you've got to remember that these groups are supposed to be open to individuals, and I think there's actually a recommendation about that somewhere, isn't it? So, I mean, you're very much characterising that as though that they would be businesses, who one business would get an advantage over another. Although I would just say that I think that, you know, a business in Somalia is in quite a different position to a business in a developed country, and that there may be, even as well as getting the developed country sliding scale, which, let's face it, is not, they might also need hardship relief, but also all groups are open to be individuals, and individuals really may need relief, and there may not be a competitive disadvantage issue with an individual.
Can I respond to that? Is that it?
Sure, Zahid, go ahead.
I think I take the point that there's individual, but they're individual businesses. It's sort of like a sole proprietorship model. But they're not non-businesses who are individuals.
Well, no, that's not true. These groups are open to... I'm an individual and I'm a member of the IPC. I mean, well, I think there's a rule in here. I think I wish SS would be able to help us, but one of these rules says that all of these groups have to be open to individuals. Where is that rule?
That's not, I don't believe, in this document, and I don't think, this is Claudio, by the way, I don't think that's...
Here it is, it's B. It's in Section 2B. All groups must offer membership to natural persons or individuals, as well as to entities with legal personalities, corporations. Now, I can tell you that the IPC has individual members, and it's a controversial issue, and the business constituency, I believe, is open to individuals. I don't know about the IPC, and I don't know about the registrars and registries aren't. Non-commercial users constituencies open to individuals.
Victoria, that text that you just quote says if applicable.
Yep.
Based upon
But the general rule is that individuals should be entitled to join groups, isn't it?
Can I step in, Olga? Olga?
Sorry, I cannot follow if you all talk at the same time.
Put me in the queue, Tony.
Thank you, Tony. Claudio, are you finished or you want to finish your statement?
No, I'm done.
Okay. Victoria, you want to add something to Claudio's comments?
Look, I know, I think I've made my point and I've probably talked too much already, but I do think
the two of you were talking together and I couldn't understand clearly what you were stating. This is why I asked one at a time.
Shall I just restate mine very quickly?
Yeah, please, and then Tony, go ahead. And let me please, then after Tony, I would suggest that I wrap up, and I would suggest that this is a very important issue, and I can write the text suggested by Victoria as a footnote, and then we can discuss this in our mailing list, because there are some other members that are not present, and maybe they want to add something to this. Go ahead, Victoria, please.
Okay, so I was just trying to answer Zahid's point. My concern is that it's important to remember in this analysis that individuals, all of the groups, it says in Section 2B of the language over the page, all groups must offer membership to natural persons or individuals, as well as to entities with legal personalities such as corporations. Now, I think it's very important when we're developing these rules to remember that because the GNSO is trying to encourage as much participation as possible, it's wrong to characterise all of that as business or commercial. Non-commercial users constituency in particular has a lot of individuals. IPC has individuals. Business constituency should be open to individuals, and we may see much greater participation from individuals in the future, and the GNSO should be welcoming and encouraging that. So I think it would be wrong to draft a rule based on the fact that there might just be businesses getting an advantage from hardship. That's all I had to say.
Okay. Tony?
Yes, well, that's interesting. Actually, I could probably give, going to this point, the example of our constituency, the ISPCP. By definition, we are the internet service providers and connectivity providers constituency. I have yet to meet an ISP who is an individual, because actually it's quite complicated to provide internet services. You need servers, you need help desk, you need a lot of bandwidth, and contracts with telcos. It sort of seems a little beyond the scope of an individual. So as somebody just mentioned in that 2B, where it speaks about natural persons or individuals, it does say if applicable. And I don't think it's applicable in our constituency. We've never turned anybody down, but I struggle to see who would be able to apply.
I understand your point. I mean, because your constituency is mainly, you have companies giving services. That's what you're saying.
What's the name of the constituency?
Go ahead.
Sorry, I'll let Tony finish now.
Yeah. I was just saying that's the name of our constituency,
yeah,
internet service providers and connectivity providers. And they're never individual people. It's just impossible. You can't do it.
No, you cannot do it. Zahid.
Yeah, thank you. I completely agree with Tony. That's what I was thinking. I mean, the same would apply to the BC itself, the business constituency. We would have to be, by definition, businesses. Even if they're individual-run businesses, they would still have to be businesses. And I think this is an important point that Victoria has raised, because if there is any doubt or room in 2B for this to be interpreted otherwise, and the words, if applicable, aren't necessarily seen as enough, and there's going to be argument about this when this goes into the constituency, we may also need to be very careful in how we clarify this in Section 2B, because we don't want the confusion in the BC or in the ISPC saying, well, I'm an individual and I won't apply. So just wanted to clarify that point.
Well,
that should be revisited, definitely.
Well, I'm sure that we will end up discussing that, and I would just like to add to that this is a point I've already, I mean, it's already been addressed. It comes up for me as well, and it comes up in subtask 1.2, where it's also dealt with. But I would like just to say that, and I think the point's raised in some of the commentary there, but, by law, and I can certainly tell you under US law and UK law, and I believe many of the Commonwealth common law systems, and also I believe under civil law, an individual would be perfectly entitled to run any of those businesses, and I don't think that it's right to prefer the corporate form. It doesn't happen in any other context legally, so I think it's quite inappropriate. And I think, given the GNSO's desire to improve its outreach, it's wrong to suggest that individuals don't run businesses. And everybody, in most countries, you can have a sole proprietorship, or a corporate form, or a partnership. They're the three main business structures. But it's wrong to suggest that there aren't individuals, and that individuals should be excluded, even on purely a business analysis, which I don't think is the appropriate one.
Olga, could I respond to that, since this is running to my comment?
Tony, yes, go ahead.
Yeah. I think it looked like what this article says is it refers to individuals. I mean, individual is one person. That's the way I read it. Obviously, you can tell me an individual runs a company. We have 70 members in our association here in Argentina. 65 of them are run by individuals. They're the owner of the company. But by definition, our constituency is not a constituency made up by individual people. You have to be an internet service provider or a connectivity provider to participate in our constituency. If you are not one of those figures, mm-hmm. one of those two, let's say, service definitions, whether you're an individual or 10 people or 1,000, that doesn't matter. Then you have other constituencies you can go to. You've got the non-commercial, you've got the ALAC,
Yes,
there
that's
are all,
eligibility,
all kinds of places
though,
you can go
Tony,
to.
I accept that what you're saying. It's quite right. But that's a fair enough, that's an absolutely appropriate eligibility requirement, isn't it? You know, you've got to run one of these businesses. But, I mean, I'm just saying that certainly under the English law, and I believe American law, it could be structured, like, for example, an individual could own the business and it could be structured as a sole partnership, even if it had many, many, many employees.
Well, that's true. It's possible, but so far, in practicality, you cannot become an Internet service provider as an individual sitting in an office. You need a lot more things to be able to do
sure,
that.
Sure, sure. Listen, the registrars, the registries, and the ISPs, yes, it's very unlikely you're going to have individuals. But in any event, the important point is your eligibility criteria. You shouldn't have a rule excluding individuals if they did meet the eligibility requirement, but it's very unlikely that they will. It becomes more important when you look at something like the business constituency. Now, business people can be individuals, can't they? And again, as I say, under English and American law, you can be a sole proprietor. I'm a sole proprietor myself in terms of business structure, and lots of professional people practice under a sole proprietorship structure. So the business constituency certainly needs to be open to individuals. And also, remember, Internet users are a stakeholder group. Users, right? And they may be in the NCUC, but they have every right and should have every right to join other constituencies subject to eligibility criteria.
Well, I can't see them being in our constituency. I mean, they'd be bored to death. But, well, okay. It's a point.
Okay. Sorry for interrupting you. I think it's a very interesting discussion, but we are 30 minutes past our time, and we have to close our call today. Let's do the following and see if you agree with me. I will write the text suggested by Victoria that is suggested to be as a footnote to paragraph C, and let's discuss this in our email list, and maybe we can find a final text. And we are okay with the text up to paragraph section 1B, and Julie will send us the link to the wiki updated document. Are we okay with the suggestion?
Yes.
Great. Thank you very much for your participation. I think we made a very important progress, and we have exchanged a very relevant idea. So let's work on paragraph C. I will send the text that I wrote when Victoria suggested it, and let's discuss about it, how we want to include this idea, and perhaps the others that were not able to participate can add something, and also SS, who was the one that led the preparation of this document.
Olga, okay. This is Julie. I have a question.
Sure, please go ahead.
The text for paragraph C, I thought I had heard Victoria say that this should be a proviso in that it would follow as another sentence, following.
Oh,
the
maybe I misunderstood that. Is that what you
I guess
meant
that would be my question for Victoria.
Oh, I think that when I said proviso, I think I was actually talking about, and I was supposed to provide you for the language, and that was for 1A. I said I would email that to you.
Yes, that's what I understood.
Victoria, this is Julie. So in this case, this would ultimately appear as a footnote. I just want to make sure I reflect it correctly.
Oh, no. No, it would go in the
text. Okay, that's my question.
But proviso sort of sounded, wasn't quite the right characterization, but it would certainly be part of, it would be a new sentence, I think, as part of C, wouldn't it?
That was my
okay.
question, Victoria.
So I will include it as a part of C. And as a new text, and we discuss if we can exchange more in detail more ideas about this. I think it's a very important discussion, and I also realize that constituencies are different in from their essence and their participants. So it may be difficult to find a final text that fits all the needs, but we have to try.
Olga, this is Julie. I just wanted to point out one other thing, if I may.
Sure.
So with respect to paragraph B, I did check the ICANN translation, and the policy is to translate into 5 UN languages, Chinese, Russian, Arabic, Spanish, and French, in addition
okay.
to English. It's assumed that English
English is the working language.
Right.
So
it's the working language.
It should be all documents are.
Right. And I have reflected this in language in all caps in the revised version of the document on the wiki.
Okay. Thank you very much, Julie. Any comments? Great. Thank you very much for a very interesting exchange of ideas, and thank you for joining.
Olga, may I ask, this is Julie again, I'm sorry, as far as the timing for the next meeting, I know that Glenn sent a notice to the list that next week all of the policy staff are on a retreat at the Marina Del Rey facility, and then I, in fact, will be on a flight at this time. Not next week, but the week after. If we were doing biweekly meetings, the biweekly meeting would occur on the 22nd of January. I unfortunately will be on a plane, and I don't believe any other policy staff will be available for that call. My question is whether or not we could instead have a call next Friday. That would be January 11th.
That's okay for me. What do others think?
Yes, I agree. I think we should, and maybe a long call too, maybe a two-hour call so that we can try and finish this.
I have no problem. Okay.
That would be January the 15th. This is Glenn.
Great.
January the 15th, right.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I was looking at the wrong count. Yes, January the 15th.
Let's set it up for next Friday for 2 hours. What do the rest of the working team members think? Silence, so they agree. Okay.
I will set up the call for next Friday at the same time.
Great, and for longer time.
For two hours.
Great. So I will send text right now when I finish the call, and let's exchange ideas, and we talk again next Friday. Have a nice weekend.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Ubi?